Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Nintendo Everything Refresh, the mostly weekly show where we keep you guys up to date on everything new and exciting in the world of Nintendo. I'm your host, Nick Serpa, joined today by Nicholas Chade.
Hello, everyone.
And making his long-awaited return, we've got the wonderful Dennis Gagliardotto.
Hello, hello. Happy to be here.
Dennis, the people have been asking, what's been going on in Dennis's world?
It's just the usual case of, you know, Bowser taking over. Bowser coming through.
Yeah.
And
that's what he does, man.
Yeah, just making a mess of things. So I'm just trying to keep him at bay, you know.
Well, we're glad you were able to escape Bowser's fury. That's, you know, we're very, very grateful for that. And yeah, sorry we didn't have an episode last week. Things just didn't quite work out with the timing and everything. We do try and put one out every week, but it's just been crazy time for all sorts of reasons. Looking ahead to next week, we're hoping to put out an episode because, of course, you know, there's something kind of big happening next week. We all want to talk about Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. But it's a little bit up in the air right now, so if we don't have an episode next week, we will definitely have one the week after. And the good thing is then we will all have played the game even more, so there will be a lot to chat about regardless.
Well, I'm just thinking about like how funny it'll probably be if we do record a podcast, which, I mean, is the plan, but, you know, we're all just kind of saying what to each other as we're still playing, as we're recording, we're just playing, and we're just so distracted by... playing Zelda on the Switch, just because. What was that? Oh, okay. just give me a second. Just finishing up this dungeon, hold on.
Be like, no, I'm not making a boat right now. No, I'm podcasting.
Yeah. With 80 propellers.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, exactly. If we don't have an episode next week, apologies in advance, but we will definitely have one the week after and talk all about Tears of the Kingdom. We promise. Now, before we get into things, we do have quite a bit of news to cover this week, but I want to just get this out of the gate here at the start of the show. We're doing another giveaway. This one is thanks to our friends over at Forever Entertainment. You may remember, if you are a somewhat longtime listener of our relatively new show, that we have done giveaways with them in the past. Last year, we gave away the remake of the first Front Mission game. And this time we're giving away 5 codes for Magical Drop 6. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I wasn't very familiar with Magical Drop until I saw on the eShop that they were putting out a new game this week. Apparently this is a really long running, series of Japanese puzzle games. Apparently they were really big in arcades, a long time ago. And they've been on all sorts of consoles, everything from the Neo Geo to the Game Boy. But this recent release, Magical Drop 6, this is the first new game they've put out since 2012, which is crazy. I can't even remember what I was doing in 2012.
Oh, neither do I. I don't know. I mean, that was... I know I was there that year. I was there for 2012, but I don't remember anything else, really.
Yes. Were you playing Magical Drop 5 by chance, Dennis, at that point in time?
I can't say that I was, but honestly, like, I do love games like that, though. And it's funny you bring it up because I was kind of in the same boat where I wasn't very familiar with it until recently. For the same reason, just kind of saw it and passed by it in the eShop, and I was just like, hold on, this looks kind of neat, actually.
Wait, there are 6 of these?
yeah, there's a lot of these. Where have these been? Yeah.
Right. It's like,
we'll tell everybody but Dennis about these games. but no, they look great, though. They look absolutely fantastic.
Yes, these are sort of matching puzzle games with a kind of anime flavor to them. There's different unlockable characters. This version of the game has multiplayer, and a ton of other different modes too. If you're into this kind of puzzle matching game, you should definitely enter the giveaway. If you want to enter, just head over to the Nintendo Everything YouTube channel. Find this episode of the podcast. This is episode 53. And just leave a comment down there with the word magic in it. And then when we have our next episode, we will announce the 5 winners in that episode. and we will try and find a way to get in touch with you and give the winners their codes. So yeah, thank you Forever Entertainment for thinking of us and for putting together this giveaway. And I love giving away games on the podcast. I feel like I'm doing a good deed for the community, you know?
Yeah, it's always fun. It's like, you know, you get to be your own little digital Santa, you know? So it's great.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Dennis. I'm glad you understand. I am the Nintendo Switch Santa. That is my
name. Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
All right. let's get into our headlines for the week. Well, I guess the last 2 weeks. Quite a bit has happened, and some follow-up on some topics that we've discussed in recent weeks. A big thing is that we've been talking more about lately, what with the unceremonious murder of E3, we've been talking about physical events a lot, and whether Nintendo will ever have a big presence again. And just over the span of, like, this past month, since we were asking that question, not only did they announce their own event, but they also just this past week announced that they will be returning to Gamescom for the first time in a couple years. It's been a little while since they've actually exhibited there. And yeah, we don't have a lot of details on that, but I mean, more likely than not, they'll actually have some type of playable content on the show floor, don't you guys think?
Yeah, I think typically for Gamescom, there doesn't tend to be a whole bunch of new announcements, maybe a few trailers here and there, but I think big companies tend to just use it as a lot of demos and letting people actually try out the games. And I think Nintendo will probably follow suit. I don't expect them to do a whole bunch of reveals, especially because they have the whole Nintendo Direct format that they've been focusing on. But I think based on the time... Well, actually, that's the thing. Based on the time, we don't know really what they'll be showing off, because this is in August. We don't know any of their games past July, I think.
I think the last game that we know about is Pikmin 4, right?
Yeah.
And then after that, it's kind of just an open slate?
Yeah. So really, I don't think we have any clue what they're going to be showing here. But yeah, so this should be exciting.
I'm just going to keep mentioning Metroid Prime 4 until I will it into existence.
Every time you mention Metroid Prime 4, it gets delayed another 3 months.
Yeah, just a little bit more, yeah.
Oh no, okay. I'm sorry, Nintendo, I won't talk about it again. Presumably we're going to get some type of summer Nintendo Direct showcase, right? Unless they decide to do Twitter announcements again. But either way, by the time August comes around...
Sushi Striker 2, August baby. Around, we...
yeah, we should have some sense for what games are going to be coming out in the fall by the time Gamescom comes around. So who knows? Yeah. Maybe there will be some surprises.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of... Obviously, this is just speculation and theory, that if we do get a system that might be announced for either holiday this year or sometime early next year, that an initial announcement for it could happen in the summer. If that happens, I guess it's something they could talk about more at Gamescom, but again, that's kind of a reach.
Yeah. Also, it's in Germany, which, you know, is kind of out of reach for a lot of our listeners, at least. But yeah, still cool to see, regardless. Now, on top of that, this week, now this may be more of interest to our listeners, because I don't know if y'all are aware, but Tears of the Kingdom launches in less than a week. you guys might have been aware of this.
This is a little meme.
And, it's, I don't think anyone's heard of it. And in the lead up to the launch, they're doing a midnight launch at Nintendo, their New York store. But they'll also be hosting a Treehouse Live that's going to be showing off some gameplay, kind of counting up to the release. Which I think is interesting because, you know, at that point, I'm just going to wait to play the game. I think I can wait a couple more hours to just download the game and play it myself.
Yeah. Some people, man, they need that taste.
I thought I'd at least mention it.
Have yeah, they done true. Something like it's, this before?
Talk about a last-minute marketing cycle.
Yeah. one more commercial a couple hours before it comes out. It's the super close to launch trailer. That's what.
Yeah. I don't know why. I feel like they've done this before. Like, there was some other release where the evening before the launch, they just put out a Treehouse segment. I don't remember for what, though. It might have been Pokemon, maybe? Or, like, Fire Emblem? Something like that.
Hmm.
Regardless, this is a very... I don't know what the idea behind this is, really. Like, what the marketing gimmick of this is. I guess it's to get people more excited before the game releases, but I feel like it's not really going to change too many people's minds at that point.
Yeah, because especially if it's just so soon. Like, I mean, we're not talking like a week or two. We're talking like, yeah, like you said, 24 hours. You know, it's like, you know, I mean, I don't know if they just assume like, wow, our consumer base really suffers hardcore from amnesia. So we've got to remind them one last time.
Hey, 5 hours from now, go into a store.
Yeah, hopefully they can remember 5 hours from now. If not, that sixth hour hits. Oh, we got to put out another trailer.
Yeah, I think something that might be a little more of interest to folks, if you played Breath of the Wild, Nintendo put out on their YouTube channel this past week, they put out like a 7-minute story recap of Breath of the Wild, which I don't think they've ever done before for any of their games. I can't remember if they've ever done like this type of format before. You know, which I was kind of kicking myself because I think it was like 2 weeks ago, I carved out like an hour and a half to watch like all the cutscenes again, like one of those cutscene, you know, compilations. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh my God, I could have saved myself an hour of my life and just watched this official Nintendo 7-minute video. So so there you go. There's another way to get hyped up for it if you're looking for that. So yeah, so those were some surprising things this week. Now, this probably is not going to come as much of a surprise to anyone who has seen the Super Mario Brothers movie, but it is now the second highest grossing animated film of all time, which is actually,
yeah, well, domestically,
that is a little bit surprising. Yeah, but it's been setting records all across the world too. I mean, I think it was setting some records in Japan. I mean, this movie is by all accounts, like, it is a huge financial success for Nintendo, despite some of the mixed critical reviews, which is actually kind of funny because one of the things Miyamoto came out and said when he was talking about this movie and how successful he's been, he's like, yeah, actually some of the negative reviews probably helped a little bit. I'm like, oh, it's an interesting take.
Yeah, all news is good news, I guess.
I guess, yeah, they must be onto something.
I mean, clearly it's worked, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but if a movie gets bad reviews, I'm not really lining up to go see it. Mm-hmm. I went into this one pretty blind, and I was hoping it would be good, you know, and I kind of figure, like, you know, like, when it's a big IP like this, a big animated movie, there's always people who are going to come and say, like, oh, you know, it's just a kid's movie, you know, it's not... story's not very good or whatever, and you know, and I'm not trying to sit here and say this is like the pinnacle of modern cinema or anything, as we've discussed, Nicholas.
Wait, it's not?
Like,
I don't know, well, Martin, okay, Scorsese would disagree. Yes, fair.
All right, I'll take my words back. Yeah,
yeah, don't wanna speaking of which, Dennis, how did you enjoy this movie? I don't think we've heard you talk about it much.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've been gone the last couple of weeks, but yeah, no, I it was fun, man. It was a great time. It was about what I expected. It didn't exceed my expectations, but it definitely was not lower than my expectations either. Because I set the bar, I think, I don't want to say high, but at a pretty good level that I would expect from, honestly, no different from what I would expect from your sort of, I don't want to say standard Mario game, because honestly, I think Mario games are masterpieces, but I didn't think this movie was a masterpiece, but I thought it was really, really great, just a really great time, and I knew it was going to be good just because Illumination is a really talented studio, and I love, you know, the Despicable Me movies and the Minions movies are, you know, a lot of fun and everything else that they've done, and, you know, Shigeru Miyamoto was attached pretty heavily in it, right? So I mean, it had his touch to it, it had his supervision, it had his guidance, and if it didn't have that and it was just sort of your run-of-the-mill Hollywood, like, let's just take this IP and see what happens, and then it turns into a disaster more as it usually does, you know, then that's, you know, then I would have been worried. But, you know, Shigeru Miyamoto, you know, again, given his golden touch. You know, I wasn't worried ever since the beginning. The only thing I was worried about was Chris Pratt's voice, which again, everyone in that movie was good. He grew on me, but still wasn't ideal. I still think they could have been better, but otherwise everyone else was good. I thought Charlie Day did a really good job as Luigi. Obviously Jack Black, I mean, my God, a brilliant performance as Bowser. I mean, it doesn't get better than that. But yeah, no, the film was a lot of fun, and you know, the moment it was over, I wanted to watch it again. You know, like it was. That's how good of a time I had with it, and especially if you're a Mario fan, like I feel like a lot of us are. I mean, I grew up with Mario. One of my first games I ever played was on the Super Nintendo. I had the Super Mario All-Stars cartridge, you know, that had like, you know, 4, 5, 6 of those games up to that point. And, you know, Mario's kind of always been embedded in my DNA. My favorite game of all time is Super Mario 64, you know, so.
There you go. Are the target audience.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, dude, my coffee is sitting on a question block coaster right now. You know what I mean? Like I love Mario. Like I really do. And yeah, so that movie was definitely for the Mario fans, you know. But even if you were just kind of going in as someone who knows Mario because, you know, you're just, you know, a parent of a child that loves Mario, or just because you were like, I'm gonna just go see this animated movie because it looks like a good movie. Yeah, I know Mario. I mean, Mario's a globally known name. You know, you still would have had a good time. You know, but it definitely respected and catered to and appreciated the people that have been around, you know, for decades. And, you know, with all the references and obviously the incredible music. So, yeah, I mean, that movie, I think, you know, if I'm going to rate it out of a 10 here, that movie was a very, very strong, like 8.5, I would say 8.5. Which is more or less what I was expecting.
Wow.
Too. You know, I was expecting around an 8 range for that movie, but yeah, but it's a very, very strong. Like, again, I mean, that's definitely a movie that I could watch over and over again. It's a fun movie, beautifully animated, and hopefully one day we'll get a game that looks like that too. But that probably won't happen, you know, for another 10 generations. You know, you know, until Nintendo decides, oh yeah, no, we'll utilize Unreal Engine 5 now. You know.
Yeah. You know, I think for me, something that I thought was really cool. So I went and I saw the movie that Wednesday that it came out. And I went in the evening, and as I was walking into the theater, this family was coming out. And they there's this little kid. He was wearing like a Mario hat. He had a Mario shirt on. You could tell he just came out. He was just having the time of his life. And they were taking a photo in front of the movie poster together. And I was like, you know, like, that's really what this movie is for. You know, it's, I mean, as much as all of us adults who have nostalgia for it are going to watch it and love it, really, like, if you're a kid and you're seeing this and, you know, maybe this is one of your first exposures to Mario, or maybe you've played the games and you like the character a lot, like, that's the kind of thing that's going to stick with you, you know? Because, like, I remember when I was a kid going and seeing certain animated movies with my family for the first time. So I think those types of, you know, 20 something years from now, you're going to hear some of those kids who've grown up now being like, oh yeah, I remember when I saw the Mario movie in theaters when I was a kid. And that was, you know, I think that's kind of cool personally.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, that's like me when I think there's probably a few of those, but the one that immediately comes to mind for me anyways is the first Pokemon movie. I saw that movie in theaters, the original Pokemon film. And, nice. You know, let me tell you something, that ending, you know, if that whole theater didn't just turn into a room of fog because of all the tears, you know. But yeah, no, that was a crazy experience. And I look back on that fondly, not the crying part, but just seeing, you know, that movie in theaters, and how awesome of an experience that was, because that was the first time, you know, I was 7 at that time, right? So, and, you know, seeing these characters in these Pokemon that you love from, you know, these games all of a sudden get blown up into this gigantic silver screen, it's unreal, man. It's, you know, it's like a whole different experience. And at that time, you know, I mean, you're just so you know, your imagination runs wild at that age, right? So it's like you're in it. You're so in it. Mewtwo was terrified on that pick screen. You know, him just coming down, just being like, you know, oh, humans are terrible. It's just like, okay, but I'm good. Leave me. I'm good, Mewtwo. Look, whatever you want me to do, I'll get you a coffee. What do you want? I got you. Just don't hurt me, man. Don't hurt me. But yeah, no, that movie was insane. That, and I saw the first Yu-Gi-Oh! Movie in theaters. That movie came out on my birthday. That was cool. That was a lot of fun. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
There you go. See, but, you got those memories.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah. No, you're absolutely right. I think, you know, this movie will definitely be that equivalent, you know, for this generation, for sure.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of making history, here's something kind of big that happened this past week. We talked in a previous episode. Every year, the World Video Game Hall of Fame, they induct a new class of games, I guess, that are major historical landmarks. And one of the games that was announced recently as making the cut is none other than the all-time classic in retirement homes all across the world, Wii Sports. It is officially the World Video Game Hall of Fame.
I mean, it really does belong there, though. It has such a lasting cultural impact, it just makes sense.
Yeah, well, the music, too. The music, I still hear that
people
music to this day.
This game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably more people playing that than Switch Sports, to be honest.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Yeah, that would be an interesting study to conduct. Yeah, so this game, it got inducted alongside some other games that are obviously very important. The Last of Us was one of the other ones. The other one was Computer Space, which is like really, really old historical video game. And then the fourth title that was inducted this year was Barbie Fashion Designer. So,
what?
There you go. I'm not joking, Dennis. Barbie Fashion Designer got picked instead of GoldenEye 007.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, I mean, respect to Barbie. That new movie looks fantastic. I'm excited for that movie, but Jesus, the game? That fashion designer game? Really? That's kind of crazy.
It's probably some rationale to it. If I had to guess, it's probably just that it was one of the first computer games that specifically appealed to girls as opposed to boys.
Yeah.
I would guess, but...
That's true.
Yeah.
What about that pinball game that was installed on every Windows machine back then, though? The little cosmic pinball, y'all remember that?
Yeah.
Oh my god, put that in the Video Game Hall of Fame. Jesus, it was so good.
There you go. Yeah, they need to like open up nominations to the public, I think, so that we can all nominate just some of these really obscure games that are like personal to us and only us. Try to get them in the World Video Game Hall of Fame.
Superman 64, let's get it. Let's get
Color
back in
Dinosaur
there.
Video Game Hall of Fame.
But yeah, no, I mean, obviously it makes sense why this game was inducted. The reason being that the fact that you can throw the bowling ball backwards was just revolutionary at the time.
Of course.
And the fact that all the little Miis would freak out, I mean... That
yeah,
right
like,
there,
whoa, God.
Hall of Fame material. Yeah, like, oh, don't hit me.
Well, it looked like a pin to you. Come on, man.
Yeah. Yeah, Nintendo's had a busy week. They're still cranking out these Lego sets too. They just announced.
Oh my God, they don't stop with that.
You know, it's
crazy.
So funny. No, they don't stop with it. But it's just so funny that, like, you know, Donkey Kong was a huge part of the Mario movie. And now he's getting his own little Lego set with Cranky Kong and everything. And yet, we're all just sitting here wondering, like, where's the next Donkey Kong game, guys? Come on. But, no, it's a cool little set. The fact that there is now an official Lego Cranky Kong figure is just amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they also showed there's a few more coming up. I remember them showing off a Funky Kong. I don't know when exactly that's going to be happening, but that'll probably get some people excited.
Yeah, you know, I figured when they started announcing all these sets that they were maybe going to do, like, one or two of them. But, yeah, they've really been creating them out. I'm sure they're selling pretty well.
Yeah.
Personally, I'm much more partial to the... they're kind of, like, I guess more, like, grown-up Nintendo sets, like... Remember when they did the one that was like
the question mark
NES
block?
That had the scrolling screen?
Oh, that too, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I always wanted to pick that one up.
Yeah, those are kind of just nicer as, like, display pieces. These, I think, are very much intended to be, like, toys that you actively play with. But I agree with you that I really like the ones that are kind of those more, not mature, but, like, the things that we're supposed to put on a shelf and just show it off because it looks neat. So things like the NES or the question mark block, which had the Peach's Castle and the Mario 64 worlds in it, was really, really cool. I'd love if they tried making more things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully we'll get more sets like that down the road. But yeah, that's what I mean. Like, Nintendo, they've just been busy with all this stuff outside of video games lately. It's wild to see. All right, one more piece of news and we'll start talking about some games. This one I feel like is definitely just worth bringing up. So there's a longtime composer at Nintendo. His name's Ryo Nagamatsu. And he has been involved in a ton of Nintendo games since he joined in 2006. He was the main composer on really big games like Zelda Link's Awakening, Link Between Worlds. He worked on Wii Sports Resort, Nintendo Land, and he's also contributed to a lot of major Nintendo games as well, like Super Mario Galaxy 2, Mario Kart 8, Splatoon. So yeah, he just announced recently that he is leaving Nintendo so that he can go and work more broadly in the industry. Which I think is kind of cool, actually. You know, he's going to go and share some of his talent with other game studios.
Yeah. Yeah, all the best to him.
Yeah, a composer like that, too. I mean, you want that sort of talent, too. I mean, that dude clearly is, you know, incredibly talented and creative. So, you know, to provide so many compositions for so many iconic games like that and, you know, have pieces that are just so memorable quite frankly, you know, integral to the game itself that, you know, you want that sort of attachment. So, I mean, I'm sure he'll have no shortage of projects, you know, if he's leaving the company and becoming sort of, you know, more of a, you know, contracted composer. So just sort of like, what's her name? Because it happened with her recently, too. Yoko Shimomura, I think, because she wasn't always, you know, contracted. So, but now, you know, her music is just absolutely incredible. And, you know, it's going to be the same thing with, you know, Nagamatsu. So
yeah, I do think it's kind of interesting because for Splatoon in particular, he's composed the vast majority of the songs in Splatoon 2 and especially Splatoon 3. Like, he's done so much of that soundtrack, and I'm just curious whether when it comes to either like future updates or the DLC expansion for Splatoon 3, if they're just going to bring him back on a contract basis to do the same kind of work, or if they're going to try and find a new composer for the game.
Yeah, it's a good question.
Because I mean, that it's his like, it almost feels like his baby, in terms of just how much he's done for it. So.
Yeah, I'm sure Nintendo's probably found some way to like, you know, maybe teach other young composers or, you know, I'm sure if they really wanted to, they could probably try and replicate like similar style of music. But yeah, no, it's, you know, very talented guy. He's contributed a lot to a lot of Nintendo games. So, yeah, we just wanted to give him a little shout out. And hey, you know what? If it means we get to hear more of his music in other games, I'm totally down.
Well, I'll tell you what, too. If he's got a little bit of more free time now, too, let's invite him onto the show.
There you go. So, Dennis, if you have a connection, I welcome the invitation.
I'll see what I can do. I'll see what I can do.
All right. Let's talk about some games. Because with Zelda coming out, I know that's all everyone cares about. No one really wants to hear about other games right now. But the reality is, there are a lot of games. A lot of games that have been announced this past few weeks. Some cool indies that came out. One of the big surprises that certainly I wasn't expecting, the So are you guys all familiar with the Dark Pictures anthology? Mm-hmm. It's like a series of horror games.
Yeah, I love those games, yeah.
Yeah, well, they just decided to shadow drop the first game in that series, Man of Medan, on Switch, which is totally surprising.
Yeah, it's
I'm surprised it runs.
Yeah, honestly. That's what I was going to say. Like,
I don't know.
are they planning to bring some of the other games in here? Because I don't know if they could put, like, Until Dawn or The Quarry on, like, on Switch. I don't know if that would even work.
Yeah, the quarry especially, because that game is gorgeous. I mean, yeah, Until Dawn, unfortunately, is still sort of stuck on the PS4. That game has not come, like, even to PC. It's still just sort of stuck there, and it's a shame because I still think that's their best work. Like, out of everything that Supermassive Games has done, Until Dawn is still the best that they've done, and it just is unfortunate that is. I mean, I get it, it's exclusive, so that's kind of how exclusives work, right? But at the same time, with a studio like that has now gone on to do so many of these choose your own adventure games and do them so well, that's the one, that and The Inpatient, but that's a VR game, so I get it. But, you know, they really need to find a way to just, I don't know, either buy that property back and make it multi-platform or something, because more people should really, really experience that game. It's a great game.
Yeah, I'll say that I loved Man of Medan. I haven't played the other ones in the Dark Pictures Anthology series yet, but I was really just drawn to this game, mostly because of the setting. I don't know, something about being on a spooky ship just is always just to me is like, I'm like, that's a great setting for a horror game.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm also, perhaps not coincidentally, I love the first Resident Evil Revelations game for a lot of the same reasons.
Oh, dude, well, that game was great. So, yeah. I love that one. I've replayed that one times. That's such a good game.
Yeah.
Every time that game came out on a new platform, man, I was there and I played it over again. Played it on 3DS. It came out on PS3. I was like, okay. Then it came out on Wii U. I was like, okay, let's play it again. And then I got it on Xbox and PC and, you know, rinse and repeat, man. I just, every time that game got ported again and again and again, I was like, all right, here we go. Round 4, round 5, round 6. Here we go.
Yeah, that game got the credit for being one of the earlier horror games that I played. So it really kind of made me into a fan of the genre.
I do remember back in the day.
This isn't about Resident Evil.
I will say, I do remember back in the day when it released on 3DS, that was a very fun public reaction of just general confusion.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that game
How is this even possible?
One of the best. Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. It was still one of the best-looking 3DS games. Like, and that was, pretty much a launch title, wasn't it? So
pretty close. It was pretty early.
Yeah, it was like a year or so after the 3DS came out.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, within that vast library, that was still without a doubt, you know, one of the best looking games for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. So yeah, Dark Pictures Anthology, Man of Medan is out now on Switch. Don't know how well it runs. So if you've played it, let us know, because I'm definitely curious about this one. Another kind of surprise announcement that, this one is even more baffling, but just for other reasons entirely. THQ Nordic is bringing Biomutant to the Switch in November of this year. and look, like, this is cool because, I mean, here's this big open world action RPG with character customization and, you know, fairly in-depth combat coming to Switch. Like, that's cool, you know? It's like, it's a big port announcement. And, you know, this game certainly had a lot of interesting ideas. It was trying to combine a lot of things together. The downside is I've heard it's just not a very good game, is what I've heard. I don't know, have either of you guys played this one?
I haven't, but I've heard similar things from that you have, that it just was very middling.
I reviewed it when it came out. I reviewed it on PC the first time, and then they sent me another code on Xbox, and I played it there. And you know, let me put it this way: the game, it's not a bad game, okay? But when it first came out, when I initially got my review code and started reviewing it for PC a couple years back, it was not very well optimized, and the same situation sort of happened when I played it on Xbox, and I at the time I think this was before the One X and the One S came out. So, but I was playing on on the Series S and the Series X, but I was playing on the One X, which at the time was the juggernaut, you know, most powerful console in the world, and even then it did not run very good at all, and the game had its flaws. It was very janky, and I know it's gotten a lot of improvements since then. I mean, they even sort of did like a sort of quote unquote soft overhaul, because I know they had a massive update maybe about a year or so after the game came out that basically renewed it, and but I haven't gone back to it since I reviewed it, so I can't say how it is now. But I don't know, the game has a lot of potential, and it's a great idea, and I like seeing games like that that really take a unique art direction and actually try to do something new with games instead of just another like military shooter, you know, and just something that's all doom and gloom, like Biomutant, you know, really tried to sort of do something refreshing and new. And the world building is actually not too bad. Actually, they did a really good job with the world, I feel. But the game overall itself, it's you know, it's not bad. It's not great. You know, if you have time to spare and you're kind of just in the mood for something new and you're curious enough, and you have the time to spare, yeah, check it out, you know. But it's, you know, but it's not one that I would also go out of my way to, you know, beat either, you know. It's not, I don't know. Sure, there comes a point with that game where it's just like, all right, like, I've seen enough. And not because you're bored, but it's just, you know, you just want to play something else after a while with the game like that. So
you're like I get the concept, you know, like it's fun for a little bit, but that kind of thing, you know. I mean, I think it does have a lot of cool ideas, you know, with, I think the world design, you know, the overall aesthetic of it is really interesting. There's also just the point that we just don't get a lot of games with this type of, you know, you have a little animal hero that you get to deck out with gear. It kind of reminds me of, like, older PS2 games, like Cooper or Jack and Daxter or stuff like that. So yeah, there's definitely an audience for this. Yeah. Well, if you are interested in this one, it is currently scheduled for November 30th, so... luckily, they're not putting it within a week of Tears of the Kingdom, so that alone should give them some hope. So that's good. Now, unfortunately, one big game that is not coming to Switch anymore is Marvel's Midnight Suns. This was supposed to come to Nintendo Switch last year. It got delayed a couple times, and eventually they said, you know, we have to delay it again, we don't know when it's coming, and now we know it's not coming at all, which I think is a little bit of a bummer, because I feel like these types of strategy games are really like a good fit for the Switch, but this game, I do see how it could probably have a hard time running on the platform.
Yeah, my guess is it just probably underperformed to the point that they decided it's not worth putting into development efforts for Switch, because the game is still releasing on, I believe it's PS4 and Xbox One. Those are probably just easier for them to develop for and to just downgrade the PS5 and series versions than it is to try and optimize for the Switch, which is why this one is getting canned.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. This one is a shame. You know, I heard it didn't sell very well, and I mean, I haven't played it myself, but I've heard great things about it from folks who have played it. Like, if you're like a really big Marvel fan and you want to see some different takes on some of your characters, you want to see them all interacting with each other, and almost like, I've heard some people even kind of compare it to like Persona, where you're like building up like social links with the different like Marvel superheroes, and you know, you have like a hub area where you can talk with them, and there's everyone's just all kind of like hanging out, and you can like watch a movie with like like, you know, your favorite superhero. Like, it's weird. Like, it's a weird game, which I think is very cool.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't review very poorly.
Yeah, so I'm bummed that it didn't No, it didn't. But it also just didn't seem to sell very well, was what yeah. I heard. So yeah. I'm sure that is part of the decision.
I guess it was arguably just too niche, given the fact that it was very specifically like this whole dark magic theme to it, and that as a strategy tactical RPG, it's just kind of too niche of a genre for the general market to which you would try and get, like, that general Marvel appeal.
Right, right. Yeah, no, that makes... I'm sure that's a lot of it. It doesn't have the same curb appeal as something like Marvel Spider-Man or Guardians of the Galaxy or something like that. So yeah, it's a little bit of a bummer, but yeah, it does, luckily, you know, still exist on other platforms, and you might want to go play it on something else anyways. But yeah. Over on the indie front, though, things are looking pretty good. I guess I don't even know if you can still call Don't Nod an indie studio anymore, because they make so many games, and they're all really good. But Don't Nod, they're the makers of Life is Strange originally. They've been working on a new project for quite some time called Harmony, The Fall of Reverie, which was announced in a recent Nintendo Direct. And we didn't really know much about this game other than it's got a very different style. Most of Don't Nod's games are, you know, if you've played Life is Strange, you're familiar. They're like 3D kind of modern adventure games. So they play kind of with modern controls. You know, you're exploring these dense, very realistic environments. This game looks really different. It's got a totally different art style to it. Looks in a lot of ways kind of like a point and click adventure, although I'm not sure if that's how it actually plays. But the interesting kind of conceit with this game is that your protagonist, she has the ability of clairvoyance, which I didn't really know what that meant until I watched the gameplay trailer. But basically what it means is that when you come to a point in the game where you have to make a choice that's going to affect the story, you can kind of see a little bit into the future, so you can like look a little bit up on the flowchart and like see little glimpses of like what might happen if you pick this choice. So it's kind of like a visual representation of like seeing into the future when you're making a decision, which is really interesting. I'm really curious to see how that will play out.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool novel concept. I remember when they had showed it off in the indie world, it was definitely one that was kind of striking just because of the art style, and it seemed to be doing some pretty interesting things narratively. I will be interested in seeing what the reception for this is once it releases, because I think, given how unique it is, it's going to be a certain group of people that it's going to appeal to very heavily.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool to see them branching out and trying something different. Because I don't really think they are working on the Life is Strange games anymore. I think that whole series has gotten handed off to a whole different studio. So, yeah, no, it's cool to see something else coming out of them. And I'm definitely excited to hopefully get my hands on it at some point. And yeah, this game, it also has a release date now. It is coming out June 8th. So, yeah, right around the corner with that one. Okay, and this next game is... I love the concept of this. This game is called Sunshine Shuffle. It is a narrative poker adventure game where you are playing poker with animals that are part of a criminal group, and you are on a ship, and you are learning about... I guess a bank heist that went wrong like 12 years ago that was conducted by these cute little animals while you're playing poker with them.
Yeah. When I was looking through the list of topics we could talk about, I noticed this game, and I was really hoping we would talk about it. It just looks delightful. It's so silly and cute, and yet the whole concept of these anthropomorphic animals being like criminal gangsters is just... it's just great.
it's like the game manifestation of like that famous painting with all the dogs playing poker. I feel like that had to be an inspiration. Right?
That's right. Oh, of course.
Um, Yeah, I'm also, if you guys watched the trailer, it's, I wouldn't say it's a good thing, but it certainly caught my attention. But they have like the little Animal Crossing text boxes, and the sounds that play when they're talking sounds like almost exactly like something out of Animal Crossing. It really just adds to that contrast of the whole premise of the game. So yeah, this is, it's a very creative idea. It's from the studio that made this one. They're called Strange Scaffold, and they've made other weird games. I mean that as a compliment. Their previous games include, I'm just going to read this little list here, An Airport for Aliens, currently run by dogs, Space Warlord Organ Trading Simulator, and Hypnospace Outlaw. So yeah.
That's certainly, it's certainly a list.
Yeah. So yeah, if you're interested in this one, it's coming out May 24th, and I really want to check it out. It looks totally up my alley. All right. Let's talk about what actually came out these past few weeks. Some recent releases for y'all. Nothing super big. We talked recently about Advance Wars. We talked a little bit about the Xenoblade 3 DLC, although Nicholas, I'm sure you could talk about that all day long if I let you. But we've got some smaller projects we're shouting out. One of them, I guess kind of a small project, but it is still an RPG, so it's not like it's this little tiny game that you can just blast through. This game is Trinity Trigger. We talked about it a little bit on previous episodes of the podcast. I don't really know too much about this one. It's just kind of a modern take on the classic top-down isometric RPG. I think the big one with this one is that you can play it in co-op, which is definitely a big appeal to a lot of people.
I think it has three player
co-op. It has some talent behind it too.
Yeah. Yeah, we have a review
Okay, three players.
Yeah, we have a review for it on the site. That can help you narrow it down, because it's kind of snuck under the radar for the most part. I don't think too many people have been playing or talking about it. It's seeming like the general impressions is that it's a good basic RPG. It's nothing groundbreaking in any way, but if you just need a little shot of classic RPG gameplay and narrative, it's there for that.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, not everything needs to be, you know, Xenoblade, right, Nicholas?
I wouldn't complain.
No, I'm just giving you a hard time. Yeah, no, I think it looks like a good little diversion if you're, you know, looking for... I mean, combat looks pretty fast-paced, I'll say that, and it looks like there's a decent amount of variety in terms of environments, and I like the character design for the portraits. It's certainly got some personality to it. But yeah, it's coming out at such a busy time for fans of RPGs. But yeah, if you are interested, this one is out now. Came out a few weeks ago. So I'm glad we finally got a chance to talk about it. This other game, I've also mentioned it somewhat recently. It's such an interesting concept that I wanted to bring it up again. This one is called Desta, The Memories Between, and it is a strategy RPG where it's really hard to explain, but basically you're throwing dodgeballs as a metaphor for like working out conflicts with people. So the whole premise is like you are like this girl and you're going back to your hometown and you have all this like emotional baggage, I guess, with folks from your childhood who, you know, like you parted ways with, and there's still like some tension or things that happened in the past or whatever. And when she goes to sleep at night, she's in this dream world where she first, I don't know why it manifests as like a dodgeball match basically, but yeah, it's, you know, you like move around the grid and you like team up with other of your friends and you use it as like a, you know, it's all very deep. It's all very This is a thinking person's game, is the vibe I get. I can't even explain it well. So
is that because of the narrative?
Or it looks really
that's on me.
It's a tactical RPG.
You know, that's a good question. I when I was at Summer Games Fest last year, I did get the chance to kind of sit down with the developers. And granted, it was only for 5 minutes, and I didn't actually get to play it because we were in such a time crunch. But they gave me the pitch for this game, and like it seemed really cool the way they were explaining it. I'm just not doing a good job at explaining it myself. But yeah, it's we've also talked recently about how it's weird how many dodgeball-themed games are coming out right now. And I haven't seen one that is a grid-based strategy game with a emotional story attached. Right. So it's certainly a unique idea.
Yeah, I'm really curious as to how exactly the dodgeball mechanics work out in a tactical RPG style like battle system. Like things like rebounds and whatnot. I would be very curious to see how exactly those systems actually mesh together.
Yeah, well, I mean, you do. Like, you actually can't, like, you can, like, bounce it off walls and environments. You can, like, pass it to your opponents and do trick shots and stuff. So that, it actually seems fairly deep. I'm personally curious about the story and how they tie all these things together. This is by the people who made Monument Valley and Alba Wildlife Adventures. So they definitely have a penchant for telling these kind of unique, sometimes surreal stories. So yeah, I'm glad to see that this one came to Switch. It was a Netflix exclusive for a while, so it's nice that it's finally on other platforms. All right, now this next game, this one also I feel like came up in a recent, I can't remember if it was a full Nintendo Direct or if it was an Indie World, but this is just an absolutely gorgeous Metroidvania game that is very fast paced. It's got beautiful pixel art. It's called After Image. It's been in development for a little while now, and I wouldn't say I've been following it super closely, but I have been waiting for it to come out, and it's been great, getting great feedback. It's just extremely just smoothly animated. The backgrounds are beautiful. I mean, if you're looking for a Metroidvania that's gonna just really pop off the screen on your fancy new Zelda Switch OLED, this might be for you. Frankly, I have a hard time getting tired of these games, and this one is just, it just got a lot going on. It's got, they're saying there's over like 50 NPCs that are scattered around the world that you can talk to. There's some RPG-like mechanics, like different types of armor and stuff you can collect, stat upgrades. Like, this is like a whole, you know, this isn't just like a platform experience. Like, they're saying, like, there's a lot going on in this game.
Yeah, no, not like it looks gorgeous, and that's definitely a selling point, but just looking at some of the gameplay, it also seems like generally it has some very good mechanics, some systems and whatnot that are well integrated and just look like they probably feel pretty good to use. So
I
actually got a code sent to me within the last couple of days actually for for that, and I haven't had a chance to play it just yet. I got a code for on PC, so I'll be playing that version. But yeah, that the game, I've been following it now for quite some time, and like you said, it's the visuals are just so striking, and that's what drew me in right away, because I'm an art style guy, man. It's like the moment I see something with great art, I'm just like, oh my god, what is that? I need to know more. You know, like even if the game is absolute trash, I'm just like, no, but it's good because it's got great art. Like I'm that guy, as I need that great art. And But After Image seems to have the whole package, though. It's got beautiful art, great level design. You know, and if you're a fan of Metroidvanias, it just seems like an absolute delight to go through. Hopefully, once I'm able to play through it and, you know, properly assess it, then I can give a more thorough review, you know, at a, you know, in a podcast in the future. But yeah, no, the game is, it looks gorgeous.
Yeah, I should correct myself here. For some reason, I feel like I remember, like, this game just, I described it as a pixel art. It's really not. Like, it's, for some reason, I felt like I remembered, like, the actual character animation itself. Like, it, like, kind of, like, subtly has that look to it, but it's just, it's so refined, it doesn't really look like pixel art. But it's much more of, I would say, like an anime hand-drawn mm-hmm. style, if you're looking at it more broadly.
Definitely.
Yeah, but regardless, yeah, really good game. And yeah, Dennis, if you do play it, I'm really curious to hear what you think about it, for sure.
For sure, yeah.
All right, and one more indie game I want to shout out before we get into our last segment. This one is going to appeal to all those folks who've been asking for a Zelda Maker. It's not quite that, but it's pretty gosh darn close, it looks like. It is called Super Dungeon Maker. I feel like this was also highlighted somewhat recently by Nintendo. And it is basically a Zelda Maker without the Zelda aesthetics. You are making these dungeons. I think there you might even be able to like lay like traps and stuff like that. And it just looks like there's a ton of options in terms of things you can place and puzzles you can make and different objects that you can kind of scatter around, you know, if you want to find devious ways to make a locked chest annoyingly hard to get to, this seems like your game for sure. And it looks like you can share the levels with people too and play levels that other folks have made. So I think this is definitely going to appeal to a big audience of folks who've been clamoring for this type of game for a long time now.
Yeah, it kind of seems, unless Nintendo has some things planned after Tears of the Kingdom, it kind of seems like they've dropped the idea of having a Zelda Maker, despite that being something that was just super highly requested around the time of Mario Maker. So hopefully this is something that will help scratch that itch for people, because I don't necessarily see Nintendo doing it anytime soon.
Especially with how quick they dropped support for Super Mario Maker 2 also.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one was always a little shocking to me. I really thought they were going to give that game more content and stuff down the road, but they did for a little bit, but just not to the extent that I think a lot of people had hoped. But yeah, regardless, it's cool to see indie developers picking up the slack in that area, and this one is getting great feedback over on Steam. So yeah, I think this one is probably a pretty safe bet if it looks like a good time to you. All right, we are just about the end of our show, but before we wrap things up, we're going to end with our classic segment, Refresh Rate, where we talk about all the games that we've been playing lately. And Dennis, let's start with you, since it's been a little while since we've had you on the show. What have you been digging your teeth into lately?
So I've been playing this now for, technically I started in January, and then I sort of like went on a hiatus a little bit. But then within the last month or so, I've really just been sort of running through it, because I really just got the itch for it. But I actually finally beat the other day Final Fantasy VII Remake Intergrade. I hopefully I'm not missing about 10 more words in that title, but I finished that. And it's been just such an incredible time. You know, at first it was one of those games that sort of got better as I played it more. Because at first I was like, yeah, okay. I mean, it's good, you know. But I was like, I don't know if I'm gonna play more than like 5-6 hours of this. You know, it just feels like, I don't know. It just feels like it doesn't really feel like Final Fantasy to me. And then, and next thing you know, 10-15 hours pass by, and I'm just like, all right, this is getting pretty good. I like the system here. The user interface is gorgeous. Everything about it is just so clean. And not to mention every single frame in that game. I mean, you just saw the millions and that budget just coming out of the screen. You know, it's so good. The production value is through the roof. And but I was like, okay. Next thing you know, 20-25 hours pass by, right? I'm like, you know, I'm about halfway through the game at this point, and I'm like, you know, it's good. I'm having a great time. Some of these bosses are a little stupid, but you know, it's you know, I'll play another chapter here and there. Anyways, long story short, I beat it. and it was after about 65-70 hours, because I was just doing a lot of side quests and stuff too. And it's a really great time. And I'm almost done now with the Yuffie DLC expansion, which isn't too long. It's like 4 hours. So almost done with her story. And and then I'll basically have 100%ed. It, at least in terms of story, there's still a couple more achievements I gotta go. I'm like about I'm about 4 or 5 achievements away from getting the platinum, though. I mean, I'm playing on PC, not PlayStation, but, you know, just getting 100% achievements, though, you know, because I want them all. So, but yeah, no, it's been an absolutely fantastic time. I mean, the story, the cutscenes, the quality of this game is just really, really incredible. And I think, you know, it's funny because playing this now has me less excited for Final Fantasy 16, actually, which I think probably seems counterintuitive to what Square Enix wants to happen. You know,
because
that's their next big title release.
No, I totally hear what you're saying, because it's like, you know, Final Fantasy VII Remake Part 2 is right around the corner, you know, supposedly later this holiday. And look, I don't know about you guys, but there's only so much time in a year to play Final Fantasy games. I'm like, if I have to pick I think I know which one I'm leaning towards.
Yeah, exactly. Because, like, honestly, like, I have such a backlog of games anyway. So, like, Final Fantasy 16, I mean, it looks okay, man. I don't know. Ever since the reveal trailer, there's just something about it that I haven't been able to click with. And as they've shown more, I've been able to get more into it. But that's still not really a day one release for me. And I don't know why. I don't know if it's because of the setting. I don't know if it's because of the main character, who I just find very boring. I don't know if it's the cast or what's going on. I don't know. Everything about it just feels so generic, especially coming from, never mind Final Fantasy VII, but Final Fantasy XV. Well, Final Fantasy XV was just, I mean, regardless if you liked that game or not, the presentation of that game was very unique and fun. And it was just like, all right, here's this boy band, and we're just going to go, you know, and, you know, save this kingdom, and oh my god, Luna, and, you know, all that stuff. And they had a, you know, movie come out of it too. I mean, it was just such a big universe that they expanded on. They had the anime, and just, they just did so many crossovers. Noctis was in Tekken 7, right? I mean, Final Fantasy 15 just blew up in ways that I don't see 16 doing. And yeah, I don't know. It again, I mean,
no,
all remains to be seen, right? So
I hear what you're saying, because I kind of feel like 16 is just, I think this is what you're trying to get at. It's just, it's lacking that bit of personality that just makes it
exactly
really distinct from the others. Like, I feel like every previous Final Fantasy game has had something really unique about it, you know?
Yeah.
Some big shakeup to its setting, or just some, you know, characters that are just really memorable out of the gate, or, you know, really just fascinating new mechanics that we've just never seen before. And I'm just not seeing any of that in this. It seems like their big selling point is this is going to be a really gritty, you know, dark take on Final Fantasy, which I'm like, you know, that could be cool, but we have plenty of gritty, dark games that are not Final Fantasy games. And if anything, I really like how Final Fantasy games aren't super serious all the time, and how they kind of have that little, you know, bit of quirkiness and humor to them alongside
more of a color palette.
Yeah. I mean, so I'm sure it'll be a great game, but
the story has definitely been looking like they're going back to a bit of the basics in terms of having like the four crystals of the elements and the different kingdoms being a bit more typical high fantasy. I feel like the selling point for this is probably the gameplay. They put a lot of emphasis on the new kind of combat style, the fact that they've gotten the combat designer for, I believe, Devil May Cry 5. I think that's probably one of the big elements, is they're trying to change up that kind of gameplay to make it both more approachable to people who might not really be into RPG elements, and also just to bring something fresh to the series. A lot of what they've shown has kind of been in line with that as well, with the big icon battles, just having like this very bombastic, impressive looking gameplay. And I think also you can pet the dog, and that's enough of a selling point personally.
Yeah. That's right.
Well, there you go. Well, no, I'm glad, Dennis, that you finally were able to carve out some time and play it, because yeah, I played it earlier this year for the first time too, and well, I think it was a little bit longer than it needed to be, you know. I could have gone without spending so much time in like the Shinra Tower, for example.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Overall, it was, I think, a really good game, for sure.
Yeah, it's great. It's definitely a daunting task, I mean, because it will consume a lot of your time. But thankfully, I appreciate what Final Fantasy VII Remake Integrate did, which it wasn't even though it remained linear without feeling too constricted. And what I mean by that is, you know, since everything is just so open world now, open world this, open world that, not everything needs to be open world, but Final Fantasy Remake Integrate still had big enough areas for you to roam around in and do side quests and not feel so claustrophobic while still feeling focused on what you need to do next without getting too distracted. Like, this game was great in just keeping your eyes centered on where to go next. And I think that's why I was able to just seamlessly really just get to the end, even though, you know, again, at first I was like, I don't know. But, you know, one step forward was just one step closer to the end, right? It's not like, you know, a lot of other open world RPGs now where it's just like there's so much bloat, you know, and, you know, nonsensical treasures and stuff. Like, I always think of Assassin's Creed Valhalla, man. Like, Valhalla, even though that game was good, it was too damn big. That game is just too damn big. And, like, you don't know what direction you're going in, even with the storyline, and it's just, there's too much happening. There's just too much happening. And, like, I get that, you know, Ubisoft wants you to play that game and only that game for the next 3 years or whatever, you know, but sorry. That's the only game
they're going to put out for the next 3 years.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So, but it just feels very selfish, you know, where it's just like, you know, hey, gamers, look at us. We got this brand new Assassin's Creed. Isn't it cool? Now play that and only that. We're going to tie you down to this chair now. So tell your family and friends you won't be seeing them.
Do you
ever
like Vikings? We hope you really like Vikings, because that's what you're gonna get for the next 300 hours.
Right. Yeah. But it's just so bloated and I don't like it. But anyways, yeah, no, it's just to sort of wrap it up, it's been a really great time. And I was initially gonna jump straight into Crisis Core after this, but no, I need a breather, man. I've just been playing sort of smaller things after I beat it, you know, just lightweight visual novels. And I tried out the Street Fighter 6 demo the other day, which was awesome. I can't wait for that, man. That game's gonna be great. That was a nice little one hour sort of teaser of what that game's gonna be like. It's definitely Street Fighter in a new direction, but my god, you want to talk about art directions, the art direction of that game is absolutely fantastic. But yeah, that's really all I've been playing.
Yeah, no, that's good. I'm glad you've been able to cross some things off your list. What about you, Nicholas? What have you been enjoying lately?
Well, quite a lot, actually. I mean, the most obvious thing is Future Redeemed, because I played through that and beat it in, like, 4 days, which was probably not exactly a reasonable thing to do.
Wow.
But I did it, so...
You know, it's basically a full game, right?
It's not as long as Torna, I don't think, because it has a bit less bloat to it. So beating it was about like a 20-25 hour experience, and then completing it took like an extra 5 hours, which was honestly really nice, because as much as I love Xenoblade games and as many as I have completed, having something that is just kind of short and sweet, it's a nice little refresher. But yeah, Future Redeemed was just super fun. Narratively, it tied in a bunch of things that I would have liked. It also raised more questions than I would have expected, considering that it's supposed to be the conclusion of this like 6-game/expansion saga. But regardless, it was very cool. The gameplay felt refined compared to the base game, especially some of the exploration elements. It did this really nice thing where there's a lot more incentive to be exploring, because the game actively tracks like all of the containers in the overworld, all the treasure chests, the locations you find, the enemies you beat, and gives you rewards for like completing each task. So kind of like a checklist, you're incentivized to be exploring the world more, which I've always done anyways in these games, but having like an actual list of things you can do and knowing what you're missing and roughly where makes exploration even more fun than it's been in previous games personally. And I just really enjoyed it. It was a fun experience.
Okay, so questions about this. So Is it a different map than Xenoblade 3, or does it share the same map? Because to me, the idea... Okay.
Yeah, it's a completely different map.
Okay, because to me, I was like, oh, it would be so annoying if I just spent 100 hours exploring this map and now they decide to add in a big checklist of things for me to go visit. But no, if it's a new environment, that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah.
And the other thing I've heard about this is that in some ways it's kind of a prequel to the events of Xenoblade Chronicles.
Yes. Yeah, 3. It is.
And so do you think, like, feasibly, like, if someone really wanted to, they could play this before Xenoblade Chronicles 3? Or is that a bad idea?
Probably not. with Torna, you could make the argument because a lot of what happens is relatively disconnected from the events. Like, there's returning characters, but there's only really, like, 2 or 3 of them. And their roles in Torna don't really matter to the events of Xenoblade 2. Too much, it only goes so far as, oh, you know who this is and you already know their background. But it doesn't affect things too much. For this prequel, it feels like they expect you to know what is going on. Like, you should be aware of what's happening in the story relative to, like, the events of Xenoblade 3 before you play this. Because so many of the events from that game come as a direct result of things that happen here. There's characters from here that aren't exactly explained who they are, because the expectation is that you've played the base game, so you know that already. So yeah, this is definitely something where you would want to play the main game first before going into this.
Gotcha. Okay.
It's also just
I'm glad to hear that you've been enjoying it.
Yeah, it's also just a complete fan service reference fest, so honestly, it'd probably be better to have played Xenoblade 1 and 2 as well.
Right. Well, I know I've said this a lot, but I am actually, as we get through the summer a little bit, I think I've said in the past, I've, like, penciled in my Xenoblade 1 playthrough for July, so as I get closer to that, I'm actually really excited, because the more I hear people talking about these games, the more I'm like, all right, I want to see what this is all about.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. I also made a few other stupid decisions, other than beating Future Redeemed in, like, 4 days. Which is, I started playing through A Link to the Past before Tears of the Kingdom came out, with the expectation I might be able to beat it. Well, simultaneously, I'm also doing a co-op playthrough with a friend of Resident Evil 5. So I am...
Oh my god.
I am putting a lot on my plate.
Yeah, man. That's
the way to play it.
Yeah, you got a lot going on right now.
I was just saying, like, that's the way to play it, Resident Evil 5. I have a very fond memory of that game where... you know, even though it's one of the most, I think, conflicting Resident Evils in the series, I remember picking up that game at midnight and staying up until 8 in the morning with a friend of mine, and we played for 8 hours straight and we beat it. And there was a lot of Dr. Pepper and chips all over the place, and but we beat it, and it was just such an incredible experience. You know, playing just 8 hours straight. I mean, we didn't blink, we didn't move. It was just, you know, us and Resident Evil 5, and it was just such an awesome time, you know, playing that game co-op. And I remember going to the leaderboards after that, and I think we were ranked, I think, 10,000th in the world or something like that, or 8,000th, you know, in terms of, like, our you know, game time, because we had eight-ish hours out of, like, a million people. That, to me, let me tell you, I that was, like, number one to me. I was like, you know what, out of a million people that already picked this up on day one, and you know, we're 10,000. I'll take it. That's a gold trophy to me. I'll take that. Absolutely, that's great. But I knew
that's
something. Well, yeah, but I knew something was wrong too, because the people who were top 10 also apparently beat the game in 30 seconds. I was like, that's not nope, that's not right. That's false. That's something there's broken. Yeah,
I missed the speedrun strat.
Talking about the speedrun,
30 seconds. Yeah, the just click watch credits strat. Yeah, and then, but yeah, no, it was a fantastic experience. But yeah, no, playing that game co-op, that's the way to go. Yeah. Resident Evil 5 for sure.
That's been super fun. I think we're about 2/3 of the way through, and that's just been a joy. Nice. Honestly,
yeah,
it's also been, like, my first Resident Evil game. Yeah. So
ever.
Yeah, I've seen a decent amount of Resident Evil games, but I've never played one up until this point.
oh wow
that's,
yeah,
that's crazy.
I have never played 5. I haven't played all the Resident Evil games, so I've played a few of them. And yeah, my understanding is that 5 is definitely where the series kind of began to, you know, after 4 kind of started leaning towards action, 5 really leaned into the action, and then 6 leaned into the action even more. I haven't played 5, but I have played 6. And I mean, even though I know a lot of people will say, like, oh, 6 isn't, you know, horror. I mean, it's people will say 6 isn't a Resident Evil game. I think it's absolutely a Resident Evil game. I just don't think it's a horror game, really. It's very action-focused.
Yeah, that game is not horror, like, at all.
Yeah, no. But if you liked 5, Nicholas, I think you'll probably like 6. 6 it got some crazy set pieces with some absolutely bonkers moments.
I've seen the car tornadoes.
This is a Resident Evil story.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. No, that's very cool. As for myself, I'm kind of in the middle of some stuff, and I didn't, you know, things have just been so busy just in my personal life that I'm just like, not really in the mood to start a big game. I'm already in the middle of some big games that I'm like, I'm not going to get these done anytime soon. So I don't really want to pick something else up. So I just played some shorter stuff this week. I just kind of dabbled in some smaller games. The main thing was I took advantage of the latest Switch Online game trial, which was for Cadence of Hyrule, which I had never played before. And this is it's a cool little game, man. It's, you know, I loved Crypt of the Necrodancer. That was one of the first roguelites I ever played and is honestly one of the few that I've actually enjoyed. Just the idea of combining, you know, this very precise rhythm-based timing with combat and overworld traversal, and it's really fun. And it just, to me, just never really got super repetitive, despite the whole structure of the game. And, you know, with Crypt of the Necrodancer, I mean, it basically is very, you know, almost that exact same game, but just with Zelda overworld and Zelda enemies and Zelda music, and you can play as Link or Zelda. I mean, like it's what's not to love, you know? I will say with this one, though, I do wish that it didn't have that kind of roguelike procedurally generated structure. I wish it was a little bit more of a, you know, traditional kind of, I don't want to say linear, but just, you know, a little bit more handcrafted. Just because, I mean, that's one of the things I think that is lost. Like, you know, there are some, you know, there's still some puzzle solving and some areas where exploring still feels rewarding, but it doesn't feel like exploring in a regular, you know, 2D top-down Zelda game quite in the same way. But I do think it's a great time. And if you like rhythm games and you like Zelda and you can at least tolerate roguelite structure sometimes, I think it's worth checking out for sure.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was enjoying that. And then I also decided to try an indie game that has been on my list for a little while. It's called Umurangi Generation. And have either of you guys heard of this game?
No.
Is it a visual novel, Umurangi?
No, it's not. So it's...
okay, never mind.
I really wanted to try it because, it feels like a game that was, like, pulled from my brain. It's a it's a first-person, I guess, photography simulator is probably the best way to describe it. But it takes place in this kind of... I don't want to say cyberpunk, but it's like, you know, you're in like some unnamed, like somewhat like, you know, Russian inspired futuristic city. And it's like the end of this, you know, era that it just kind of implies that the world has gone to shit. And you're just like, it's kind of a chill game because you're just exploring these really small environments in this kind of crumbling city. And you're like a street photographer. So you take photos of, like, you know, people who are putting up graffiti on the walls and people who are, you know, break dancing in the streets. And you are, you know, you're given like a set of, like, you're kind of dropped in these small environments and you're given a list of like shots that you're supposed to try and get. And so it's interesting, but I was just so bummed by it because even though I love everything it's trying to do, I love the art style, I love the music, it just like didn't work properly for me. Like, for example, like, I would get, like, it, the thing would be like, all right, go take a picture of some birds, like, as an example. And I would like, it was like, go take a picture of, like, seven birds. And I'd be like, all right, I'll go find seven birds hidden around this environment, take some photos of them. And I would do it. Like, I would, like, I would try taking photos really close up of the birds. I'd take some from farther away. And it just, it wouldn't, like, recognize that I had taken a photo of the birds. And so it wouldn't count. And I couldn't progress at a certain point. I was like, okay, well, I guess I'm not playing this game anymore because it's not letting me complete it. So it was just...
I hate when that stuff happens.
It was a bummer.
That's
too bad. Yeah. Yeah. But I will say, like, if the game sounds interesting to you, like, if the whole premise, it's certainly very quirky and not for everyone, but if you like the idea of something a little bit more, I guess avant-garde is a good way to put it, I think it's worth checking out. Just be prepared to deal with some glitches, potentially. All right. Well, folks, I think that is about it for this week's episode. Thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in. Again, if we don't have an episode next week, we'll definitely be back the week after to talk about Tears of the Kingdom. And don't forget, if you've listened to this whole episode, please go enter our giveaway over on YouTube. Find this episode of the podcast, enter the word magic in the, your comments, and then when we do have our next episode, we will be announcing the winners at that point. And yeah, thank you so much for listening. If you like the show, please spread the word. We are really always trying to reach new people. It would really help us if you went over and rated us on your podcast platform of choice. And yeah, with that said, we will be back at you next week, or maybe the week after, with everything new and exciting in the world of Nintendo. See you guys later.